The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar. Forgive my voice today. I got a bit of a cold, but hopefully I won't be doing most of the talking anyway. We're here today with Alex Edwards. Alex is a freelance touring and session guitar player based out of L.A. and Nashville. He spent a lot of time in Nashville. He recently moved out to L.A. to check out the scene out there. He's toured with Parachute, Jana Kramer, Claire Dunn, and several others. He writes and produces when he's off the road, and he's also an avid golfer when he's not on the road. You're the second guy in 2 days who told me they loves golfing. That's pretty
cool. Really?
Yeah. Do you know Chuck Ward back in Nashville?
I don't.
Matthew Lee?
No, I don't.
Those two guys golf together. Yeah, I just talked to Chuck. I didn't know Matthew golfs, but he was telling me yesterday. Chuck was telling me. So that's the new trend, apparently, man. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Alex. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, man.
Of course, man. So what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
Well, I just kind of moved to L.A. a couple months ago, and so it's been really fun to just meet new people and kind of see the scene out here and, you know, start playing around town a little bit and getting plugged in. So it's been pretty exciting to, you know, stretch myself musically and kind of socially.
Well, how is it? Okay, so let's talk socially first. How is it different out there than Nashville? Because Nashville is one of the warmest, you know, places I've ever been.
Totally. It's actually like I thought, and everyone kind of thinks that LA is just cutthroat and like people kind of are like out to get you and like one up you and how can I use you to get, you know, further. But it's really not. I've kind of seen that it's very similar to Nashville, whereas everyone kind of knows everyone. Which is really amazing. Like I was just at a friend's birthday party like 2 days ago and I was like, all right, I'm probably only going to know just the guy's birthday, who it is. That's it. And I went there and I knew like more than half the people there. And it's just crazy to see, Even though it's such a huge city, the music industry is super small. So
how did you know that many people? That's pretty.
I mean, I've just been kind of like just through different circles that I've been hanging out and stuff. So. Yeah.
So you've been going out of your way to get out there and sort of make tracks and get connected. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Definitely. And, you know, like when I moved out here, I knew a bunch of people and then them introducing me to their friends and then, you know, just different, you know, parties or shows or whatever. It's just been so fun to meet new people and get plugged in and stuff.
That's awesome. And I think now you're a young guy. Now's the time to do all this stuff.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you're I'm assuming you're single and unencumbered. Yeah. And that's great, man. That's good.
I figured I might as well move out here while I still can.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if it doesn't work, which I'm sure it's going to work. Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can always go back to Nashville or Atlanta or wherever the hell else you want to go.
Totally.
That's cool, man. I'm really happy you did that.
Yeah. It's been fun.
So you're originally from Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
What kind of childhood did you have growing up in Atlanta?
Pretty normal. It's like we lived in the suburbs, and I had like a good group of friends who they're still like my best friends right now. Like, you know, every time I go back home, we pick up right where we left off. And, so it was a pretty great childhood. My parents don't really play music. And so I was kind of like a skater kid in high school. I was like skateboarding a lot. Sure. And, I was like so into that, so into it. And then I fell and hurt my ankle really bad, like fractured it in three different places. And it was pretty rough. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to pick up music.
Like this happened in high school.
Yeah. This was in high school. I didn't start playing until like junior year of high school. Yeah.
Wow. So what was your first, so what were the steps? So how did that idea get in your head even?
Well, my mom had this super old classical guitar from the 60s. She was kind of like a hippie back in the 60s, and she hadn't touched it in years, and it was down in the basement. And she was like, well, you know, might as well here, like play it. And I had a friend who played guitar, and he was taking a guitar class at school, like for the next semester. And he was like, dude, you should totally take this class with me. And I was like, well, I don't know how to play guitar. He's like, it's fine. Like, just do it.
Right. And so did.
I did.
So as a junior in high school, you enrolled in this class.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, So what was the progression? You're in this class and you got this old acoustic guitar from the 60s.
Yeah.
And so what happened next?
So basically, probably not even a week or two later, my best friends who I all skated with and stuff, they were like starting a band. And they were like, dude, we really want you in the band. we would love for you to play guitar in the band. And I was like, guys, I just started playing guitar like a week ago, like literally a week ago. And and they're like, it doesn't matter. Just play in the band. And they're all my best friends. Like I hung out with them every day. Like it was like that. So it was like a super, you know, natural thing. Yeah. It wasn't forced. So I kind of basically learned to play guitar by playing in a band.
That's so cool. So it sounds like it was like almost serendipity, like everything worked out.
Yeah.
You get injured, you pick up this instrument, and all of a sudden you got an opportunity to play in a band. That's like the universe is lining up behind you, man. That's really cool. That's great, man. That's a good story. So were you taking lessons this whole time? Because, I mean, it's a big stretch from I just picked up this guitar, I know G, C, and D, and then I'm a professional.
Right.
How did that?
Right, yeah. I didn't really. I took a few lessons, like maybe like three or four, but that's about it. I kind of realized that I could hear what I wanted in my head, and if I just figured it out.
So you had a good ear.
Yeah, totally. So that was just basically, and being in the band, you know, it was like, all right, we're going to play this Green Day song, or hey, let's play this, you know, blah, blah, blah song. And so I'd listen to it, and I'd figure it out, you know? So I kind of didn't really do formal lessons, so I feel like my technique is probably terrible, but whatever.
But you know what? I was talking to you know Jeff King?
I don't.
Okay, so Jeff's like one of the like a first call guy up there. He's probably my age, so he's been doing this, you know, 30 years and I was he's kind enough to take me back to his studio and I was playing some of his guitars and I said, hey, you know what? I have a question for you. I always play this riff off this Clapton thing and I struggle with it a little bit here. And I said, it has to just do with the way I'm picking it, I think. Is that correct? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, what's the right way? He goes, Craig, there is no right way. You guys got to figure out. So don't, you know.
Totally.
There is no, don't worry about your technique.
It's not as important as you would think.
Well, yeah, and everybody says that, you know, that doesn't get you the gigs. It's, you know, how well you hang and if you're a contributor and a, you know, responsible, good work ethic, that kind of stuff.
Totally. Yeah. Like you figure like, all right, you're on stage for an hour a day and then you have 23 other hours where you're around everyone. So you got to be a better hang for 23 hours than, you know, the 1 hour on stage.
Than the last guy was.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Okay, so when did you move over to electric once you started with the band and your folks saw that you were kind of serious about this?
Yeah. Yeah, my mom bought me one of those like Epiphone starter packs that had the guitar, cable picks, and amp in it.
Little
and stuff.
Amp. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then had that for a while. I wish I still had that guitar because I would totally play it.
I was going to ask you what happened to that guitar if you still had it.
Yeah. I sold it to a neighbor like years later, which was I kind of regret that. But played that. Yeah.
And so then you started with the Epiphone and then everything just kind of kept going from there. And were you like practicing nonstop pretty much?
It was more like just jamming with my friends. That was like kind of like the practice. I mean, obviously I'd sit down and like, you know, learn stuff, but I kind of learned by doing it. And we started playing shows like around Atlanta and stuff. And so I was like playing shows within, you know, a few months of me starting to play guitar.
Were you nervous?
I was a little nervous back then, but it was with, you know, my best friends. So we all, you know, were in it together, which was fun.
Yeah. So the shared anxiety was easier because you all split it together and you're all
totally
like, such close buddies. That's really good. Totally. Man. That's a good story.
Yeah. The most nervous I was when we played like our school's Battle of the Bands.
How did you do? So
we won both years that we entered.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun.
What a great story. So man, in all likelihood, you're going to do great out in LA because everything is just sort of like, you know, I hate to use the word lined up, but it's fallen into place is probably totally a better way to say it, man.
Yeah. Even like the, like how it was happening for me to like move to LA, it ended up being like too perfect for me not to do it.
What happened?
Like when it came down to like housing and I kind of like had wanted to do it for a couple months. I was like thinking, and I was like, all right. And I did a tour last summer, with, some people who the opening band was all guys from LA and we hung out so much on that tour, like became like really good friends instantly. And they were all like, dude, you got to do it.
Okay. So you had that little support system built in.
Totally.
There. That's fantastic.
And I knew some other people who had lived here. Cause you know, I just had been in LA a lot just with different tours and stuff. Just music brings you out to LA a lot. And so I was, you know, kind of hitting up all my friends like, hey, I think I kind of want to do this. And they're like, yeah, like definitely go for it. And it kind of ended up being perfect. Like a friend needed a place to sublease his apartment for 3 months. And it ended up like the date was perfect for me to move. It was like everything just like worked out perfectly.
That's so great. Yeah. So
I was like, all right. Yeah. I have to do it. You know,
that's good. I don't know anything about LA, but I'm looking out your window. It looks beautiful out there, man. So whatever you're doing, it looks pretty cool.
It's pretty great. I have a pool. So I live in a house. It's also great. I live in a house now with three producers.
Wow.
And they're all doing like some pretty awesome stuff. There's like gold records just like sitting behind our couches and stuff. So
very cool.
It's fun. I get to play on their stuff. Which is fun. Like every, you know, every day it's like, hey, can you come over and just play guitar real quick on this song or blah, blah, blah. And, you know,
good.
So it's great. There's always writers coming over and writing songs. And it's really inspiring to be around like so much music in this house.
And you're in the right traffic. So, which is awesome.
Definitely. Yeah. And these guys kind of have like a, you know, a reputation in LA for being really, really good. So that's great. Like, I'll like meet someone out and about and they're like, oh, where do you live? And I'm like, oh, I live blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, are you in that house that like everyone's like a great musician, a great producer and stuff? I'm like, yeah, I live in that house. They're like, oh man, that's awesome. So
you get street cred right away. That's good. Totally. Man. Really glad to hear that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
Excellent.
I'm learning a lot from them, which is great.
That is good. And I'm sure you're getting mined into their network too, which is nice.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
When you first started playing, especially not like having parents and that were familiar with or industry related, what were some of the biggest surprises to you about being a professional musician, you know, that you like, oh, I didn't know this, good, bad, or ugly?
Yeah. It's not as glamorous as it is in the movies for sure.
In what way?
There are times where it is for sure, but, it's definitely a job like anything else. Like when it comes down to it, you know, you gotta take yourself seriously to a certain point. It's definitely like a hustle. It's a nonstop hustle. You kind of always have to be on the top of your craft. You can't really, you know, relax and slack off. So you gotta take it seriously.
Do you know Chris Condon back in Nashville?
Yeah, he and I kind of traded off on a gig for a few months.
Chris made a comment to me one time, and he said, I'll never forget it, just the way he said it, because the hustle's always on, Craig. Mm. Yeah, and totally. It reminded me of that, what you said.
Totally.
When you say it's not as glamorous, can you be specific? Like, what aspect, like, where did you think the glamour was that it turns out, oh, I got to do dishes too, or whatever?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I've been in so many, like, especially starting out. So after college, I was instantly on the road. And we started out, I was playing with this country artist named Claire Dunn. And it started out, we were in her F-150 pulling a trailer. And it was just four of us. It was Claire, bass player, drummer, and me. So we had no tour manager, no like help, no sound guy, nothing. And we were doing these. Her booking agent was amazing. So we were doing these big tours and these big shows opening for people. Like we would do like a run with Luke Bryan, and we're in a Ford F-150, you
know,
and we pull up with our Ford F-150 and like load onto the stage and play for, you know, 25,000 people. So it was, and the drives were, I mean, we'd do like 17-hour drives like every weekend, you know.
That's tough.
Like play a show, drive 5 hours, wake up at 4 a.m., drive 7 more hours, like play a show kind of stuff. So it wore me out for a while, but I feel like it's, you got to pay your dues, which is great.
Yeah, did you ever feel, in retrospect now you're saying you got to pay your dues, but did you ever feel, I mean, it would have been normal to sit there and say, is this what I really want?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, the joy that I get when I'm on stage playing music is, I mean, that's all worth everything.
So that's, you know, what allowed you to persevere. You kept that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Every struggle, every blown tire on the side of the highway at 3 a.m., you know, everything, every gross hotel room, you know, that rats are crawling around or everything. Yeah.
Dude, it's funny you say that. I had a call yesterday and someone told me, I wonder if you know this place, how funny would this be? So apparently there is a place that is like a conventional stop. Sorry, I was away from the mic. For on the Music Road. It's called the Satellite Inn in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Have you ever been there?
Whoa, no.
Apparently it's like the most disgusting, like it's a common place out in the West there. And they said it's like the most disgusting thing they've ever, everybody kind of rotates through there. I asked for specific, I said, what's the deal? I said, is it like quarters on the side of the bed vibrating? He goes, I can't even, he goes, it's like, it's free, you know, it's Wyoming, so it's freezing.
Right.
And they have a space heater. There's no heat. There's a space heater and a TV. And if you use one, it sucks, you know, electricity from the other one. So if you turn on the TV, your space heater suffers. And he said it's just a well-known. So I was just curious if you.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny, man. So, okay. Wow. So basically, it's not as glamorous, but I guess your passion is what kept you
pushing
forward.
Sticking through. Yeah, and it's cool. Like, you know, I went to Belmont University and I was kind of around, you know, everyone's doing music, and it's cool to see the people who are still sticking it out. It's paying off for them, which is great. Yeah.
Do you know Sam Martinez? He may be a little younger than you.
I don't think so.
Peter Ferguson?
Uh-uh.
The only other guy, Sam, Peter, and Matt Helmkamp?
I don't think so, no.
Only to ask, because those are like my first three interviews. It was really funny.
Oh, wow.
I think they were like fresh out of Belmont, though, or maybe a year or two out of Belmont. Really nice guys.
Cool.
And I got to meet Sam when I was in Nashville last week. He was like the very first interview, so it was just kind of funny.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
So, you know, as a young guy still trying to gain visibility, what do you do, you know, to keep your name sort of out there in front of people, to have some sort of consciousness that you're around and that, you know, you're available for gigs and stuff like that? Because that's an important thing to do at any stage of your career, but I guess especially now.
Yeah, it's a super fine line that you have to ride between, you know, not being too naggy to people.
Yeah.
And then also letting people know that you're around. So I feel like, especially out in LA, since it is such a like spread out city, it's just going to events and you start seeing people at the same like shows and the same, you know, hangs and stuff. And just kind of just being a good person,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
if you're someone that I've gotten gigs without people even seeing me play ever, you know, they're just like, oh, Alex is, you know, fun to be around. He's pretty chill. So might as well hire him. I don't know what he plays like, but I'm sure he's great.
Which goes to show you, you know, what your point about, you know, that how well you play is often not a factor. You know, it's just assumed, oh, it's assumed you can do the job adequately, you know, and it's,
right,
if you can't, you get screwed. But that's
right.
Yeah, that shows how it's the least important of the factors in many ways.
Yeah. There's a certain level of, you know, you have to be professional, you have to be good at your craft, and you, sure, have to, you know, do it right. But when it comes down to it, like, 9 times out of 10, someone's going to, if someone could be the best guitar player, you know, but if they're awkward to hang out with or they're not fun to be around, like, they're going to go with someone not as good, quote unquote, as,
yeah, guitar, yeah,
but someone who's a better hang.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, the other thing too is, you know, if Steely Dan is calling it, they'll you know, you'll have to do an audition. But absent that,
right,
you know,
totally,
there's a totally different level of, you know,
right,
musicianship that's acceptable for all that.
Yeah, a lot of the industry comes through just like friends and, you know, oh, my friend blah 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 can do it. So it's that kind of thing.
You know, one thing I noticed in talking to the Nashville cats is it's a, like as you said, it's a fine line also between self-promotion, like,
yeah,
like, so I'm coming from the business side as a marketing person, and to me, mm-hmm, you know, getting your name out, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to get your name out there, but when I was talking to some of the guys, none of those things, like, for example, a monthly newsletter or a monthly email newsletter even, and they said, you know, the thing is, most of that stuff would be frowned upon out there. They don't,
totally.
Is it like that in LA, or they are a,
yeah,
little more receptive to stuff like that?
There's, the hustle is a little like more intense out here, but it's not, it's still similar to the fact in a, how, yeah, that it's kind of like you hang out with people here for reasons and stuff. And they know, you know why you're hanging out. You're like, oh, well, yeah, I want to meet you because you do this and blah, blah, blah. But it's not as, you know, it's not like treated as businessy.
So you could have a little more self. In other words, they're a little more open to self promotion outside of
a little bit,
yeah,
a little bit. And I'm so bad at that because I just want to hang out with people and just be friends. You know, I'm not like, right, a, right, hey, you know, like, yeah, you know, I'm not like a schmoozer like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like, I could care less. You know. So it's been really interesting trying to have to do that a little bit out here. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I just want to be friends with you. I don't want to, like, you know, schmooze you.
Yeah. And it's hard to probably come up. And then, you know, you're thinking, I'm assuming you're thinking like, man, I hope this guy doesn't think my sole purpose for coming here is to, like,
right,
get a job. I'm, you know, if,
totally,
that happens, great.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, yeah, know, you know, outside of like, if it comes up in conversation, to be direct about it and say, hey, listen, man, I was just really interested in seeing your music or seeing you play or whatever. If something comes of it, great. But, you,
right,
know, my primary focus is to meet you and watch you play. And I mean, what,
right,
more can you do outside of that? I mean, you know, they either believe you or they don't.
Yeah.
And totally, that's out of your control. You know, that's a,
totally,
function of, somebody once said that to me, they, in business. They said, well, how do I know you're being sincere? And I said, well, you know, when you go to a new dentist, how do you know that dentist is being sincere?
Hmm.
That's, you can't ask me that question. You're asking me how you make decisions about evaluating people's sincerity. And when it comes down to it, you can't answer that question. That's on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's,
you know,
good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I don't know how you make, you know, you want me to tell you how honest I am? I mean, I can't do that. You have to have a feeling about it, and you have to have some sort of a process of evaluation, just like you would with a school teacher for your kid or a dentist for your wife or a cardiologist for your mom. I don't know how that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People often ask that question. I'm like, that's your stuff, man. I don't know. I can't, you know, if you have any questions, I'll answer, but I can't fix your head for you, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
Who are your biggest influences playing wise on guitar?
Well, I grew up listening to a lot of like rock and, my band like went in high school, like we went through like a classic rock phase, you know. My favorite band is probably like a toss up between like The Killers or Augustana. And those records like really like when I was like first starting to play guitar, like listening to those records blew my mind. Like that feeling of like hearing a song for the first time, and I was so excited about music and so excited about like playing guitar and stuff, and you know, hearing like a guitar riff or something, and just being like, whoa, like I like love that so much. Like, what is he doing? Blah blah blah. What's going on? So yeah, like Killers, Augustana, like Jimmy Eat World was a huge influence on mine, and even like there was like some other bands called like Copeland. They did like a lot of atmospheric stuff, which was really cool, and those kind of bands kind of helped shape me.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
What about guitars you play, like as far as your own gear? What are your, like, let's call it your top three guitars, and what's your go-to?
Ooh, well, it kind of depends on what style I'm playing. Over the years, I've kind of collected up a lot of different guitars for different styles and stuff, but I would say my go-to would be probably a toss-up between, I've got a 335, awesome. Kind of like yours.
Yeah.
It's a gold, which is really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even think I've ever, can you pull it out? Is it close by?
Yeah, it's there.
I don't think I've ever seen a gold top three.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had the same thing. The Bixby was put on.
Yeah. I did that myself. Well, I didn't do it myself, but I bought it without a Bixby and then put the Bixby on it.
That's so, you know, it's funny. Okay. So you see those two holes there.
Yeah.
So, apparently,
you've got the plates on yours, right?
I got this little custom made. Can you see this?
Yeah.
I asked John about that. I'm like, man, should I take that off? He goes, no, that's where the holes are. I'm like, holy shit, I didn't realize that. He goes, that's why he liked this. Apparently, he said this is what all the vintage 335s, they all came with something, you know, some little sticker on there like that.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man.
I had mine. Yeah. And they were like, are you sure you want to drill into this? You know, it'll hurt the resale value of the guitar, blah, blah, blah. You know, I buy guitars to play them.
Sure.
I don't buy them just to look at.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm taking it on the road. Like, it's going to get beat up. I don't treat my guitars like they're my babies, really.
Right.
You know, like I will beat them up and scratch them and, you know, they're tools, you know, and I mean, I haven't like ever broken a guitar, you know, snapped it in half or anything, but they get beat up. Like I have my other go-to would be like a Duesenberg. I've got a Duesenberg.
Interesting.
And it sounds good no matter what. Like I know that guitar so well. But there's a huge chunk missing out of the headstock and the Bixby broke on it. So I just don't have the little bar. And the everything's all rusted out and stuff. So it's you know, I use my guitars hard on the road. You know, the road is really hard on your gear, but I feel like it makes it have more character.
Oh, absolutely. Where did you find a gold? I've seen, you know, the blue ones that Dave Grohl has and blonde, red, and black.
Yeah. I found it on, I think it was on reverb.com.
Yeah.
And I was looking for, because I knew I wanted a 335, and I was just kind of happened to look, and I saw it, and I was like, gold, I didn't even know like that was a thing. And I kind of like researched it, and they kind of did gold in like the 50s or 60s for a little bit, and then they just, probably in the early 2000s, they like did a little reissue of a few of them.
Yeah.
I think. And then, yeah, so this was one of them, and he had it up for a price, and I lowballed him like a lot, just like kind of just to see. It was like a very low compared to what he had it up for, and he was like, "Yeah, sure."
Wow. Like, yeah. So did that make you suspect? Like, I just bought like, a piece of shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I was kind of nervous, but I got it, and it sounds great, feels great, and then I put the Bixby on it.
Awesome, man. Very cool. Yeah. Good story. Yeah. So that one, your Duesenberg, what would be your third?
Ooh, I've actually been really into, I bought a little Dan Electro.
Yeah, sure.
2 years ago, and those lipstick pickups. I had a baritone one, and I love those pickups so much that I needed I need to have a normal one. And that thing is just, I mean, it's plastic. It was like $200, $250. And I've used it on every recording I do.
Really?
Every single recording.
That's awesome.
It's on a track. It's the most useful thing. I mean, live, I've only played it live once or twice, but for the studio, it has been absolutely incredible.
That's amazing.
Absolutely incredible. It's got so much character. I'm kind of like, I was going through a phase of guitars where I wanted them to sound perfect and like really, really clean and pristine and stuff. But now I'm so into like getting weird sounds and like weird, like the more character, especially for recording too. I mean, live, yeah, it needs to sound perfect. But for recording, which I've been doing a lot of studio stuff recently, it's just like, I just want to get like kind of an interesting, not perfect sound.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah,
those are so kinda, three. That's like a nice combo, man. They're very unique. I haven't heard something like that. Like someone's top three guitars being like that. Really good.
Yeah.
What are you playing through, amp wise?
So, I was playing through Matchless. For the most part, I had gone through a lot of different amps, and I had a Matchless actually. Senior year of high school, I bought a Matchless after I started playing guitar. Yeah.
That's a big commitment.
Big commitment. And it was the best sounding amp that I had ever had and ever played through. And I regretted selling it so much. And I sold it for a different amp that was like super hyped up. It was like one of those boutique amps that.
What was it?
Jackson amps.
Yeah, I don't know. Wait a minute. What's the guy's name?
Brad Jackson.
Oh, no, I don't know. No, because I was referred to someone like that wasn't Brad Jackson.
It was great, but it was. It had a lot of issues, and he was really good about fixing it because it was back when his company was like really small. It was like his second version of the amp, and there's just some issues, and it never sat well in a mix. It was always super loud. Everyone was like, "Hey, can you turn it down?" And it had like it was either zero or like 100. There was no in between. It was like my amp on 1.5 was like so loud. It never sat well in a mix. It always sat on top of a mix.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like in recordings and live and stuff, you kind of just want to like sit well with the band. You
have to, yeah.
I'm a firm believer in just like, I hate guitar players that are like, look at me. Like, I just like want you to do your job and just like vibe well with the rest of what's going on in the music.
Sure, man.
You know? So I went through like a bunch of amps, and then finally, like, about 3 or 4 years ago, I went back to Matchless. And
got your Matchless back.
Yeah. But with that being said, about a year ago, I bought a Kemper.
Oh, okay. You did.
I did. And it has changed my life.
Yeah. Everybody says once you go there, it's hard to go back.
It's hard to go back. I mean, I do miss feeling, you know, an amp in front of me, you know, being loud and pushing air and stuff. But as far as sound wise, like it sounds, I profiled my Matchless. It sounds exactly the same.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very
cool. I've got a friend of mine sent me like 1,000 different
models.
Presets. Oh, yeah. Cool. Models and stuff. So I've got basically anything that I could ever need. I have. And so for recording, it's amazing too. Like every track I do, I'm going to like, be like, all right, I played through this, you know, 60s Fender, and then I'll play through this 70s Marshall, and then I'll play through this Supro, and then I'll play through this Matchless, and I'll play through this AC30, and you know, I'll send like, you know, 10 different stems for guitars, and they're all different amps and all different tones.
That's very cool, man.
Which is something you can't really do out of one amp, you know.
No, well, that's why guys who are in the studio, they have 15 amps with them because they're trying to do that. But yeah, that right. Kemper is a lot easier. The one weird thing is when you model. Like when you do when that noise it makes when you like set up like a new
yeah, right?
Holy shit, yeah. That is the most annoying noise in the world. I don't know where
the test frequencies. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My god, that is like
yeah.
You know, it sounds like, you know, like those old
spaceship.
Well, yeah, it sounds like those old movies when they're letting you know, like, okay, someone's getting ready to drop the bomb. It's the end of the world now. Like, I don't know.
Totally.
How, you know, head for the, I don't know, the silos. Or, those things called. I don't know. It's before my time. It was like an underground shelter or something like that.
Yeah, bunker.
Yeah, bunker.
Yeah, it's a very weird sound, but they, I mean, and I did a tour with it this year, and I play live with it all the time. It's fun.
It's a lot great. Easier too.
It's so easy. So easy.
You don't have a bunch of stuff to carry around.
Yeah. The parachute guys and the techs and stuff were like, all right, well, that's a lot less room in the trailer. So or a lot more room in the trailer now. So thank you. Cause I had two, amps, heads and cabs, and I had a huge, double head case was probably like 5 feet tall. That would just be the amp heads. And then I had two separate cabs and you know, it was just massive.
Yeah, it's a ton of stuff to schlep around.
Man. Massive, yeah. It's so loud, too. So,
when you were in Belmont, did you enjoy school?
Yeah. So, I did music business. So, I wasn't playing guitar for school, which was great because I didn't really want something that I love to do to be my homework.
That's a very smart thing. And you haven't... You've been consistent about that. Like you've avoided lessons. You've avoided, you know, having some sort of guitar dogma forced down your throat. So you,
yeah. So I knew a lot of guitar majors and they were just having to do a lot of stuff that they didn't want to do, which is great. Like it definitely like stretches you as a player and stuff. Sure. But I was like, well, I want to, you know, play the stuff that I like. And I don't want to have to, you know, learn jazz or classical because I'm not going to make money playing jazz or classical.
Sure. Makes a ton of sense. What was the most important thing you learned in the business end that was actually useful as you got out of school? Because, you know, in school, half the shit you learn is
is
not relevant.
I think Belmont is best for the people that you meet there. Rather than the stuff that you learn in the class. Because, you know, when I went there, I graduated, 5 years ago, you know, Spotify wasn't even a thing 5 years ago.
Correct.
You know, so the whole industry is changing so fast. It's kind of hard to like, you know, you can't open up a book and be like, all right, this is, you know, the guidelines you have to do. It changes every 6 months. The industry, you know, doubles itself. So, I think Belmont's great for the people that you learn and or the people that you meet and the friends that you make there. And you know, I still talk to most of my friends from Belmont and they're in the industry doing stuff. And you know, it's crazy. There's like a group of Belmont alums that are over here in West Hollywood and we all hang out all the time and they're all in the industry. And
that's great.
We'll all just go out for dinner or go out for drinks or something. And yeah, it's just crazy to see like Belmont people kind of like scatter out in the industry throughout like New York and LA and Nashville and stuff. And it's always fun. Like I always meet people who went to Belmont.
That's probably a very safe hang too for you, like new in town. I mean, you know people, but when you meet a group of people and it's that you already went, you know, that went to school, it's a safe place for you to like, you know, not to be yourself. We don't have to worry about, you know, who I got to impress at this meeting, you know?
Remember the pizza in the cafeteria or stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can talk about like relaxing old times, which is really cool.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's good to, it's always fun to meet someone in that went to Belmont and you can kind of connect over that real fast.
Good, man. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing instead?
Like music in general?
I don't know. You like for an occupation, if you weren't a musician playing guitar, what would you be doing?
I'd probably be trying to be a pro golfer.
Really? Are you that good?
Yeah. Well, I like grew up playing it. So I've been playing since I was, you know, 5 years old.
Oh, longer than you've been playing guitar. Much longer.
Definitely. Oh, wow. Much longer. Yeah. I was on the team and growing up and, I actually took a class at Belmont, a golf class. Just it was like you need to take like an exercise class or PE or whatever. And so I was like, oh, of course I'm going to take golf. This will be easy. And I remember the first week we didn't even swing. We were just like focusing on grip and stuff. And so I was just like, okay, like you know, like whatever. I remember the second week we started swinging, And the teacher was like, hey, like, let's start off like with a sand wedge or something. It's super easy to swing. And I pulled out my driver, which is like the biggest club. And she was like, well, are you sure you want to, like, you know, it's going to be hard to swing. And I was like, oh, I'm fine. I got it. And I swung and hit. And she like pulled me aside after the class. And she was like, hey, if you want to be on the Belmont golf team, we would love to have you. Like, we need you.
Did you go on?
No, because I wanted to focus on doing music. I didn't want to focus, like, distract myself, you know, hours and hours away from, I mean, it'd been awesome. It would've been really fun. I would've got to play golf for free, but, I definitely wanted to focus on doing what I wanted to be doing, which is music.
That makes sense.
But it's fun. Like, golf is such like a big thing in music now. Like, so many people I know play golf, and it's kind of like, you build relationships that way. Like, Will, the singer of Parachute, who I've been touring with for a while, like, he's an avid golfer too. And like, the tour manager is a golfer too. And so we'll all just like on a day off, like, that's what we do.
That's great.
Sometimes on show days, we'll do it too. You know, if we have enough time, if we wake up early enough.
That's fantastic, man.
Which is great. Yeah. So it's fun. It's really fun.
What would you say, like, your, and, you know, I'm almost reluctant to ask this question because you have so many years to go. But early as you are in your career, what do you feel so far has been like your biggest business win? And it may be just moving out to LA, because that is a big win for you.
Yeah, I think so. I think that is. It's just that was the first – moving out here is definitely the first major change that I've had in life. Besides going to college,
it's a big assertion of independence, to be honest with you. I'm like your parents' age, so I mean, I'm looking at you as like how I'd look at one of my kids, and it is a big independent thing to be doing there, moving across the country away from friends and family. So
totally.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Any vices? You have any vices?
besides
amp collecting.
Yeah, amp collecting. Yeah, playing through a fake amp. A lot of people. I've gotten a lot of hate for that, which is really funny.
Playing through a Kemper.
Yeah. Like, a lot of friends are like, "What are you doing here? Why are you doing this?" And then I'll play it, and they're like, "Okay, all right, that sounds pretty great. All right, I get it. You know, convince people." But yeah, that's about it. Just playing through fake amps. playing pop music.
Playing
pop music, that's advice.
You have any, besides golf, you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
I love just like spending quality time with people. So besides playing music and playing golf, I just like hanging out, being around people and having friends.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's an important, really healthy part of living, man.
I like good coffee, so... You know, especially on tour, like, I'll go out to like the best coffee shop and in the city I'm at, or, you know, I love to explore.
Yeah.
I love to explore, like, when I'm traveling and stuff. I love to explore like the good coffee, good food, good drinks, you know, in every city.
Man, so. I'm a coffee snob myself. So tell me some coffees that are good, because we're always trying new coffees.
Oh, man. Well, it depends on what town you're in.
No, I mean, just like a coffee, any brand that you know that I could grab online and try. What's your favorite coffee? Let me ask you that. What's your favorite coffee?
So there's this spot in Nashville that it's called Crema, and it's kind of like my friends would go there like most days when we're not on the road. We would just go there, and you'd kind of see everyone you know there. And it was just kind of like the hang spot for my group of friends in Nashville, which is great. And their coffee is really good too.
Anything else here
in LA, I live, two blocks from Verve, which is,
I've had Verve.
Yeah, Verve
I've
is
had,
great.
Yeah, I've had Verve coffee.
So that's kind of like my crema to LA.
Right. you ever try Stumptown?
Oh yeah, Stumptown's amazing.
Man,
Stumptown's real good.
They have a brand. They have a Holler Mountain. That's my favorite of all coffees, man. It's like a It's called Holler Mountain. Yeah, I love it. It's like a breakfast blend. I like stronger stuff. My wife not so much.
Me too.
So it's like a happy medium for us, you know.
Yeah, so. I didn't start drinking coffee until college. there's so much good coffee in Nashville. And
yeah,
there's this coffee shop down the street from Belmont called Frothy Monkey.
I was there.
And I was like, yep. And everyone I know drank coffee except for me. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to Frothy Monkey every day and drink black coffee until I like it. So every day I would just go there, you know, like studying or something, and take a sip. And I'd be like, oh, this is disgusting. This is disgusting. And then the next day I take two sips. I'm like, all right, okay. And about a week and a half later, I remember this so specifically. A week and a half later, I took a sip and I was like, huh, I get it.
So you finally, yeah, you're like, so you were, I'm assuming you were not a cigarette smoker, because usually people smoke cigarettes and then they go into coffee. It's like,
no, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I smoked as a kid, and that's how I got drinking coffee. I haven't smoked in years, thank God. But
yeah,
it's
funny.
What are you looking forward to in the future, either musically, professionally, or personally?
Man, I'm just looking forward. It's just so exciting being here, like being new to LA. There's so much stuff to do. Always, there's always like events and hangs and stuff. So I'm just excited to meet more people and get plugged in, and hopefully, you know, hop on some tours and do some more studio stuff and keep doing it.
Cool. I'm going to ask you two more questions and I'm going to let you go. Tell me something that people would either be surprised to hear or would find odd. That's not in the questions I gave. That was a new question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me something about you that people would either be surprised to find out or that would find odd.
Huh. Odd. Most people can't guess my ethnicity, which is really funny. Everyone always thinks I'm something, but they never get it right. My dad's side of the family is from the Caribbean.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which is really funny. So it's, people don't know what to like say around me because they don't know what I am.
Because they may say something offensive.
Yeah. Like a newer friend texted me the other day and he was like, something about like Hispanic or something. And I was like, oh, that's funny. He's like, you're Hispanic, right? I'm like, no. He's
like, oh. Well, your last name's Edwards. I mean,
right.
Totally. How could someone think you're Hispanic? I mean, I guess you could be Hispanic on your mom's side.
Right. Yeah. No.
That's funny.
Yeah, so
that is clever. That's a good one.
It's always fun to, like, when I'm meeting someone, if they ask me, I'm like, take two guesses and see, and they never get it right. So,
yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense, because I could see Edwards being a Caribbean name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and growing up,
it's like English descendant.
Totally.
Yeah.
Growing up, my dad listened to a lot of like reggae and stuff. He still does, and so it's fun that. Now that I'm hearing like kind of like there's a lot of reggae and Latin stuff being infused into pop music now. Yes. And I'm like, psh, I can play that. Like, come on. that. Yeah. So it's fun to hear that. And yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
One more question. What's your definition? You seem like a really happy, genuine, like nice, kind guy. What's your definition of happiness?
I think you have to kind of find your happiness in little daily things, to keep your positive, which is a challenge. You know, especially, you know, me moving here, and it's like, okay, I haven't been on a tour in a couple months. Like, you know, that'll definitely, like, I'm not used to that. I'm used to always being out on the road or always playing stuff, and like waiting is kind of tough, but, you kind of have to sometimes even take like a bigger step back and be like, all right, I play music. That's amazing. Like, most people wish that they could play music for a living.
Yes.
And there's, you know, obviously there's, the highs are so high and the lows can be really low too. But, you know, if you really think about it, like, it's pretty amazing that I get to do this.
Right.
It's incredible. Like, I have played some of the like coolest venues that I've ever been to. And, you know, I've gotten to, open for these artists, and I've got to, you know, do a lot of really cool, I got to meet, you know, awesome people, and, you know, it's really cool. It's a weird job, but it's really fun. Really fun.
Well, I think that's a really important thing what you said as far as finding gratitude or happiness in the little things you do, because it takes a lot of if you're able to acknowledge, you know, this is really good, or I'm really grateful for this, or I'm really happy about that. I think it takes stress off the bigger, you know, the bigger burdens that you're having, like, oh my God, I'm not touring now.
Yeah.
But one thing too, keep in mind, you're running a business, a small business, basically, and anybody that 100%. Runs a small business has highs and lows, especially early on. So it's just part of the hustle, you know?
Yeah.
And, so I'm like 100% confident that, you know, everything's going to 100% work out for you for whatever that's
worth.
No doubt in my mind. So, hey, listen, man, I cannot thank you enough for your time. It's really been a pleasure. I'm so glad you are patient and we finally got to connect, man. And, let me tell people where they could find you online. Okay, so it's Alex Edwards. Check out his website. It's Alex Dean, D-E-A-N, Edwards, EDWARDS.com. Again, that's Alex, A-L-E-X, Dean Edwards. He's available for tracks, on tour. Check him out. He's a great hang, a good guitar player, but he doesn't play classical. thank goodness.
For some Bach or Tchaikovsky, that's not me.
Hey man, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and I'm eager to, man, a couple of years come back and I'm eager to see like what's going on, and you know, maybe you'll have a product out and you'll come on and you know, this show will be bigger and even more eyeballs, and you know, we could send people your way. So
love it.
Yeah man, for sure, open door.
Love it.
All right man, thank you for your time, Alex.
Thank you, man.
Oh, of course, man. It's been great. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. And thanks again to Alex Edwards for spending time with us. Again, check him out online, alexdeanedwards.com. We all appreciate it. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes and some cool new stuff for guitar players. Now, be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.